You're listening to the Local News Hour. Let's see what we've got in store for our weather this weekend. Here with a report is Cedric Haynes with the ABC 4 Weather Center.
Happy Friday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back on this Friday. We've got an approaching cold front moving our way. Now, it's still going to stay to our north and west today, but as that heat dome backs off, we're going to be able to tap into some of that monsoon moisture. That's going to help to warm those temperatures into the low 80s in Park City, upper 80s to near 90 in the Heber Valley, but we are going to have a chance of isolated scattered showers and storms developing during the afternoon hours for your Friday into Friday evening. So keep that in mind for any high school football games you may have or outdoor activities. Just grab a poncho just in case. Now, as we head into the weekend, that strong cold front begins to arrive as we go into your Saturday. Showers and thunderstorms will be likely as we go throughout your Saturday, especially Saturday afternoon and a Saturday evening. A couple of those storms could be on the strong to severe side with some damaging wind gusts, some large hail, and the potential of some frequent lightning. In fact, we've got a level 2 out of 5 risk for severe weather as we go into your Saturday. So keep that in mind. Have plans to make sure you can seek shelter if you need to from any of these storms. Highs will climb only in the mid-70s for us in Park City. We'll be in the low 80s for highs in the Heber Valley. As we go into your Sunday, scattered showers and thunderstorms remain fairly likely for us as we go throughout your Sunday. But the cooler temperatures will be settling in. Sunday morning, temperatures will likely drop down into the mid-40s for us in the Heber Valley. We'll see those temperatures in the upper 40s in Park City. Again, as that cold front has moved on through, that will bring in some slightly cooler conditions. High temperatures will only struggle for your Sunday to get to near 70 in Park City for a daytime high. And we'll see those high temperatures struggling to get out of the upper 70s in the Heber Valley as we go throughout your Sunday. As we move into your Monday, we'll lower those rain chances a little bit, but we'll still keep a chance of storms in the forecast. Highs in the mid-70s in Park City, low 80s in the Heber Valley, and we'll keep a few isolated storms for the rest of next week with high temperatures in the mid-70s in Park City and highs in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. As we look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back, I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Coming up, we'll be speaking with Michelle Krause about the Park City Showcase of Homes. Then Karen Marriott will stop by to chat about the upcoming Day of Service. And then I'll be speaking with Garrett Peterson, the Wasatch Schools Superintendent. When data centers are built in rural counties, property tax bills could initially decrease for Utah homeowners. But KPCW's Ula Britt Libre reports, as the value of the technology in the centers decreases, taxpayers could see increases again over time.
Utah operates under a revenue-neutral property structure. This means as property values go up, certified tax rates drop, says Kem C. Gardner, Policy Institute Director of Public Finance Research, Maddie Orrit.
Taxing entities are only allowed to collect the same amount of revenue in a given year that they collected the previous year in property tax, with a couple of exceptions.
Orrit says the two ways property taxes typically increase are either through a truth in taxation hearing or when a county gains revenue from new growth. Data centers count as new growth, she says, but what is housed inside of the center doesn't.
Anything that's inside the structure, that's personal property. When you think about a data center, sometimes the personal property, which is the chips, GPUs, server racks, that can be 3 to 4 times higher in value than the value of the actual structure.
While property taxes might initially increase with the new growth in a rural county, the value of the, quote, personal property stored inside the data center is a significant portion of the tax structure. But because tax dollars are raised at a constant rate, the real rate for the taxpayers will decrease until the technology inside the center loses value. This happens relatively quickly, Orrit says. As the hardware depreciates, a homeowner's tax rate increases to maintain the system's balance.
They may see a big drop in that first year, but then years 2, 3, 4, 5, that rate is going to start creeping back up. Now, I want to clarify, it doesn't mean that the rate is going to go above what they were paying before, but it's just going to create this volatility. And then if you think about year 6, the data center replaces all their high-value equipment, the rate drops again.
Or it says this can cause whiplash for residents. She says any changes in the property tax system need to come from the state legislature, but there are steps the data center can take to mitigate instability.
If data centers were to phase in their equipment purchases, that would create a smoothing effect. So if, for example, a new data center were built, but only a third of it were outfitted in the first year and then another third in the second year, that could help smooth it out.
She says local policymakers would be limited in their ability to manage tax instability. Ula Britt Libre, KPCW News.
Well, the Park City Showcase of Homes kicks off today. Here to talk about it with us is Michelle Krause. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on today. Because I know that today you're going to have the Q&A sessions, which I think you started last year. Tell us about what those entail.
Yeah, so the Q&A session, we would actually open it to the public to attend the event in person. And it is going to be held at a home that is over in Promontory. And it's on our home number 4. And so you can talk with and listen to all the builders and architects, as well as some of the sponsors in person. And that is at our home number 4, 6634 Painted Valley Pass in Promontory. And that's by AECOM Development home.
So will all 20, you're going to have all the builders and architects, or just a sample of them?
Well, we have all of them between today and tomorrow.
Okay, so you'll get half today and half tomorrow, basically?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay, and then so this will tell us about some of the details in building the home and some of the design choices being made. And it is question and answer. So it's an interactive session?
It will be interactive with the hosts of it.
Okay.
And then afterwards you can speak with the builders or the architects that are being interviewed. Mm-hmm. But they do dive into speaking with the architects and the builders and their vision behind the home and what it took to get the home to where it is. Some of these landscapes are very unique to the area,
yeah.
And so they have to really engineer it out and have it a very well thought out process in order to make these.
Now is this event only in person, or is it possible to see it online?
You can watch it online in two places. So you can go to our Instagram, which is at PC Showcase of Homes, or you can watch it on our website, which is pcshowcaseofhomes.com.
And for this event, do you need a ticket? Do you have to be able to sign in, or is this something you can do online without it?
It is free, and you can sign in online free.
Okay. I may stump you with another question, but I'm going to go ahead and try. Tell me, why does HBA choose to do this? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, what this does is opens up the communication with the vision behind each of the homes that are being done by these. It's really like an educational component, but these are true experts in their field of being a builder and an architect, as well as the designers. So understanding the craftsmanship, the engineering, and the design decisions behind it.
And again, the broader show is, again, to expose the public to the range of what's happening in the building industry here in Park City.
Absolutely. As everyone here listening does know, just how many homes are being built in our area, that it'd probably be great to get out there and see what is actually being done and understanding your I guess the house is being sold.
So tell us a bit about the range. One of the things I noticed when I looked at the website was that there's a range of homes being featured this year. Talk about the range. I think you would go everywhere from the various highest of high-end to a Habitat for Humanity home.
We did add a nice plethora of the home designs and pricing as well as square footage. So you will be able to see different levels of the homes, even though many of them are still and say sprawling.
Large.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as far as what you can see, just you really need to get out and visit some of these houses, because they have put so much thought pattern behind them all. Even our Habitat of Humanity, we're happy to have them in our showcase this year.
Well, one of the things you also mentioned to me as we were getting started is this architectural design showcase, which is separate from the Q&A, right?
It is. So the architect and design portion of it is separate. And what we have done with that is, it is our second year doing this. So it's one home site that is with 10 different architects' visions on it. And it is lot number 4 in Marcella at Jordan Hill Ridge. So it's visions from each of these architects. And this lot does overlook the Tiger Woods Golf Course. So these are going to, it's a virtual design that they have created. So you can walk through the homes and see it, and it goes live today. And so we're really excited to see just the visions of what can come from each of these architects over just one particular lot. So the creativity and the, I'm kind of lost there, but you know.
Hey, have you had a chance to look at it already?
I had a sneak peek.
I figured you would.
To see them.
How cool is it?
I love the 3D vision and
exactly.
The design of it. Mm-hmm. And I know how much work goes into each of these, the intensity behind the CAD programs, and not only that, like the engineering that would be required to build these houses on this lot.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the range of communities that are on the show this year. You mentioned we talked about a Habitat for Humanity home. What are some of the communities where we have homes featured?
Well, there are 23 total homes, and they're all in our county. Five of them are over in Heber. There's Modern, there's Modern Mountain, there's Mountain Contemporary, and a luxurious farm home style. And they're all designed to work within the surroundings and the nature around it.
And again, some of the communities, there's one in Promontory?
There is Promontory, there's Tuahay, and then we have, I guess they're just kind of spread out within the city as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's your thought about why? Is there an advantage to the homeowners and the builders to participate in the showcase? I assume some people are planning to sell the home, and that there it's kind of obvious why you'd want people to go through it. But talk to us about what do you think people get out of this?
Well, I can speak from a personal standpoint with that. For me, I love the design aspect of it, and I love seeing the creativity of not only the designers but the architects. Being in my industry, I'm able to tell, I know how much time and effort goes into each of these little, every detail that's in these houses. I think that homeowners love to see the creativity and getting ideas for it. So if you're into maybe building your next home, or if you love just the design, I know a lot of us women tend to go towards the designs, but it helps with the architect's vision as well behind it.
Are most of the homes for sale?
I think most, but not all of them.
Right, okay. And I know that some of the homes you mentioned, Promontory, that some of the homes are in gated communities. Is it difficult for people on the tour to be able to get into those communities?
Nope, we're ready for you to come out. If you're looking for the wow factor, this year's homes really are the wow factor. You can look at them on the website. Prior to going, you can put your map together. There is an interactive map on the website. Which helps you be able to figure out where you're going to start. As I mentioned, home number 4 is where we're doing the Q&As today and tomorrow all day long. But really, there's so many spectacular houses, you could start anywhere and be very pleased.
And without asking you to pick your favorite child, do you have a favorite one already? A couple of favorites that you would make sure. What's not to be missed?
last year we had some phenomenal homes. I mean, every year we do, but I have a couple that I want to see comparison to last year's winners. Something else that we do also is, so you vote on your favorite. So People's Choice, you can vote for your People's Choice. You can do it online as well. And so I'm just more curious in what other people think, because I have last years that I've, some of them just jaw-dropping with their, you know, just beautiful.
Now, I mentioned there are votes for this, and the visitors can vote. Do you have any kind of professional jury as well, or are the only votes the ones done by the customers?
The People's Choice is definitely by each of you out there that visit these homes. So if you have your favorites, please do make sure you make your voices heard. We love hearing from you.
Okay, let's do nuts and bolts. What days is it running? Where do I buy tickets? How much are they? Those kinds of things.
Great. Okay. So it is today, tomorrow, and Sunday, as well as next weekend. So September 4th through 7th. So it does go through Labor Day.
So it is open on Monday, next
it
Monday.
It is okay. 10 to 6. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, there's 23 homes total. You can get your tickets online at our website. There's also, if you have a problem with your ticket, we're always there to help you. There's a phone number on the website that will help you walk through it as well.
And in most of these homes, at least it's been my experience, that there's somebody there who knows, either the builder or the architect or both. So you can get your questions answered in person right there typically.
Absolutely, yeah. We're all very much excited to have you come out, and we'll help you with whatever you need. If there is for the tickets, it's pretty simple and easy on the website.
Okay. And once again, what is that website so people can find you?
Okay, visit us at pcshowcaseofhomes.com. And that's the same as the Instagram.
Okay. We've been speaking. Anything else you want to add before we go, Michelle?
No, but we would love for you to attend. Come get your wow factors. Come spend some time with us. Some of the builders, or all the builders, if you are really wanting to go to that many houses. I know it's hard to make it through all of them.
I've never made it through all of them.
I haven't either. I've tried. But that's why we have it all online afterwards. You can still see.
All right. Michelle Krause, thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
A state judge has dismissed the wrongful death lawsuit filed by the family of a Park City man who was killed after crawling into a jet engine at Salt Lake City International Airport. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports.
Kyler Effinger's parents sued Salt Lake City late last year, arguing that the city did not take proper precautions to prevent him from accessing the airport tarmac. The 30-year-old Effinger died on January 1st of 2024 after crawling into the engine of a plane that was taxiing toward the runway at Salt Lake City International Airport. His family later said that he was experiencing a mental health crisis. Third District Judge Heather Brereton dismissed the lawsuit at a hearing on July 29th. Court papers showing that Brereton sided with Salt Lake City, whose attorneys said the public duty doctrine releases the city of liability. Under the doctrine, the government has a duty to protect the safety of the public at large rather than an individual. It protects governments from lawsuits alleging that there was a failure to protect someone. The Effingers argued, among other things, that airport employees did not properly intervene in their son's crisis and that the airport security system was ill-equipped. City attorneys wrote that those allegations, quote, describe safety precautions that the city failed to put into place. They do not describe anything the city did to Kyler. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the third annual 9/11 Day of Service will be held here in Park City on September 19th. Here to tell us about it is one of the organizers, Karen Marriott. Morning, Karen.
Good morning, Roger. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Okay, let's start with a little background. Can you share a bit about the history of this event? And I know you are a key organizer. What inspired you to organize it?
Well, we kind of put together a group. We used to be called Park City Humanitarians, and I learned about this 9/11 National Day of Service and Remembrance that happens all over the state and actually all over the country. And I thought, gosh, Park City, we don't have a day of service. We have so many incredible nonprofits. We have a day of giving, but we don't have a day of service. And it just is showing up, connecting with community. You know, there's what has been a survey in the past about one of the things that everybody across all, you know, demographics, everybody felt a lack of belonging. And this is something that our mission statement, we're now a 501c3 Serve Park City, is to build community and belonging through service. And this does exactly that. It's just a really fun day in the community, getting to know, work side by side your neighbors and supporting our many awesome local nonprofits.
So tell us about why and how this links to 9/11, which of course we're coming up to the 25th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to believe.
Yes. Well, anybody alive during that time.
Anyone who's old enough. Yeah.
That remembers it. And even my young kids distinctly remember it. And, you know, again, it was made a national holiday, I think during maybe Obama's time, but it is a opportunity to remember what happened through serving others and the incredible first responders. We will have at our morning breakfast, which is a free morning breakfast, it will be from 8 to 9 a.m. We have incredible sponsors of that. Hilltop Hospitality provide burritos, Julie Hopkins donuts, the market, fruit and yogurts and Lucky Ones coffee. But we will have all of our first responders there. We'll have the sheriff's posse this year, which is really fun. I didn't even know we had a posse. But, you know, the horses coming through. We have bagpipes. We have a tap ceremony. We have a speaker, one of the first responders. I think it's one of the fire chiefs that will be speaking. And that's an amazing, really kind of emotional, and especially so many kids also come to this that weren't even alive during that time. And for them to... We need to remember, and we also need to remember the incredible first responders that put their lives at risk. So we honor them through service and building community.
And we sort of segued into the layout of the day. So yes, we're starting with the breakfast. Tell us what happens next.
So breakfast, then this brief ceremony, and then when you go, by the way, to the website, justserve.org/serveparkcity, or if you just want to go to serveparkcity.org, it will link you to that. You will see the starting times but most of them start pretty much after the breakfast. So anytime between 9 and 9:30. Then we have 44 projects that are all over the Park City community. And it's just, you know, everything from real heavy labor. You know, there's a couple really fun. I've been trying to recruit my son and some of his friends from college to come up and do the Alliance Mine graffiti removal.
Let's stop on that one because somebody was telling me about it yesterday.
Yeah.
What does this one entail? I mean, it's kind of cool to get to go into a mine building, but it's not like it's a day in the park.
No, and you know what actually is really nice is that we've asked these organizations, give us the hard stuff. Like, it actually feels really good when you do hard work on a day of service, but it's from with the Friends of the Mountain Mining
Friends History. Of Mountain Mining History.
Yeah. I know. That name is so long. I have get hung up on it.
Sally Elliott's probably listening and saying, get it straight. Anyway.
I know. But it is, I love it. I actually personally support it. But they are going to drive everybody up by the Bonanza chairlift, and they are going to get up on ladders. So it is definitely.
Is this the big Silver King building?
They call it the Alliance Mine Building.
Okay,
but they
Alliance
said it's
Mine
up
building.
By
yeah.
the, so, up there, and they're going to put some stuff on and then power wash it off and try to get all the graffiti off and paint some more of the stuff on and scrub it off. But it's kind of up on ladders. It's a little riskier, I'm just going to tell you. But we have other things like the city, the Silver Creek, often we call it Poison Creek cleanup, that the city is hosting, which is a great one. But we have like a new group, Wasteless, that is building a community fridge shelter building, and they need some people. You know, we'd love to recruit some construction companies also this year, like a good team building. It's just a morning. We'll feed you in the morning. We'll actually feed you after, too. We've Domino's and Annie M's has donated pizza and cookies in City Park from noon to one after these projects. So it's really just a morning. But we also have, you know, and in terms of really some of the hard things, we have, but also really fun. And we've had teenagers do some of these too, barbed wire fence removals just for safety of animals. There's areas that just have ragged old things, so you wear some work gloves and people are pulling out that. But we, and also even Habitat for Humanity is doing a fence they need building. So we would love some people with some construction skills. I mean, it doesn't have to be hardcore or, but then there's other ones like even the Parkside community over with Mountain Lands, that's just like a fun painting project. You know, you don't have to have a ton of skill set. But then there's...
Here's one that I'm sure is going to sell out.
Okay.
Nuzzles and Company, Walk Dogs.
Yes, it's almost sold out. It's almost sold out. So it is a first come, first serve. Get your people, get your group on. But there's just a lot of fun. Like one of... I sent my father around a couple years ago on his bike to go take pictures. And he said one of the funnest ones was this. They were crocheting hats at Wasatch and Wool for people in need. And it was this knitting crocheting group of all these women sitting around knitting and yakking. And he was like, there was so much fun energy. So the point of it is coming together, bringing people together. You know, there's lots of outdoor cleanups, but we have at the Blair Education Center out at the hospital. There are lots for all abilities. There's lots of letter writing, even thank you notes for KPCW.
And just to stop you, that's important because we've been talking about things that, you know, require getting on ladders. And I think you've gone out of your way to make sure that anyone can have an opportunity to serve regardless of their physical ability. So things like coming to help us write thank you notes, and there are other things like that.
Yes, there is like Hope Alliance Eyewear.
Talk about that one. That one's kind of fun too. Have you ever done that?
Yes, I have.
Talk about what you have to do.
Yeah, well, in there, and this is all in the Blair Education Center, so there is like 150 people in there, all ages, really young, really old, I mean, you name it. And you're sorting eyeglasses, you're cleaning them, you're redoing some repairs on them. You know, then right next to you is stitching hearts, and you're weaving plastic bags, recycled plastic bags, into homeless mats. There's another group called Dream Makers, and they make really fun cards and write letters to kids aging out of foster care. JFS also, in the past they've done pantry kits, but they're actually writing letters that go in with people that come into their food pantry.
You have a couple of food pantry products. One of which I see is cleaning the pantry at CCPC. Having volunteered myself, I think it could probably use a deep clean.
Yes, it is the deep clean day. There's only 9 out of 20 signed up for that. That is a great one. You get in and you scrub out all the fridges. You take everything off the shelves. You know, Christian Center also has one that's more out by the Home Depot at their storage unit. sorting and cleaning out stuff for their summit exchange.
And you know, they get that enormous volume of stuff donated to them. It's huge burden on them to get it sorted and into the store.
Yes, that's it. You know, and then we've got, you know, really fun ones for families. People are always asking, what are some ones that our kids can do? We can bring our younger kids to, you know, Summit Community Gardens is great. They're weeding, they're mulching, they're, but those are just kind of fun. And Swanner Nature Preserve, they will go around and pick up trash. They're looking for like 50 volunteers. That's a great kind of family. You're out on the preserve, you're in a more protected area or along the trails and picking up trash. And so there's actually, with the kids, there's a lot of kind of picking up trash.
I was going to say, there's a lot of picking up trash
options.
Kearns, the Park City Mountain, there's a bunch of them.
Yeah. Yes, what do people need? You know, People's Health Clinic would have been a good one, but that is full.
What was that one?
That was putting together hygiene kits, and that sells out always immediately. So there, you know, but there's a great one for teens, Live Like Sam organization that supports teens' mental health. They are kind of doing a big mural type project. It's in the city park, and that, you know, right after the breakfast, you can stay there and do that. But that's kind of a great sort of teen event. You know, some of the ones that could really use help.
I was going to say, where are the big holes coming?
Well, we need the Silver Creek cleanup. That is a great for a big group. And, you know, you're cutting out brush, and they're working with the fire department on that. They've got their shredder machines. I can't think of what those things are called. But that'll feel like a really great community. There'll be about 100 of those people. But we have very few signed up, so we need to get people on that.
I'm looking at the ones with the hammer on them, which is the ones that you indicate are labor. Rock Solid Restoration, what are they going to do?
They are, it's really around runoff, and they're building kind of a rock wall to protect the land in this area. So it is lifting heavy rocks. It is a kind of a you know, a more, you know, strong.
Well, that's why the hammer's on
project
there. Yeah.
That we could use. You know, the Summit County Clubhouse also that supports you know, people with mental illness and their community. They're doing some kind of cleanup, but they also kind of have a fun mural project also. And they can find things for anybody. The Children's Justice Center has a kind of yard cleanup, and that's something that could use some support. But we also Recycle Utah. They do a project out of Park City High School, and I think one of the Park City High School groups have signed up for that, but there's still plenty of room for that. Also just a really fun, and if you have, even if you just have a little bit of time, like there's the For Serve Park City, there's a community breakfast set up. You know, somebody needs to go get the burritos, somebody needs to get the things. We set up the tables, and then actually just a few people around the lunchtime just to meet the Domino's people and move the tables around and clean up. So there's something for everybody.
I am confident that very few of our listeners are taking notes of all the things we've just said. So I want to point out that, am I right, Karen, that if you go to the website, on the brochure that you just handed me, you have, you know, designated things that are good for children, child-friendly, designated things that are good for physical labor. Is that legend available on the website so someone can go and look?
If you go to serveparkcity.org, that's probably the easiest thing for everybody to remember, because we're called Serve Park City, our nonprofit Serve Park City, our Day of Services Serve Park City, our group. So go to serveparkcity.org and you'll see where you can click to sign up, but you'll see the poster on there as well. And you can always reach out to us at serveparkcity@gmail.com. But you know, there's a QR code to every one of the projects also. So it's, you just go to serveparkcity.org and it'll direct you where you need to. But everybody does need to sign up out of respect for the organizers so they know who's coming. Sometimes we have too many people show up, and it'll limit the number. So, you know, first come, first serve, get on there. And it is such a fun, at the end of the day, we've had little kids say, like, this was the funnest day ever. We've had older folks saying, this is something our community has always needed. So we just feel like we're so grateful for these incredible nonprofits. We're so grateful for our community. It really does bring a sense of belonging, and we're just happy to be able to do it. We're grateful for all of our partners, and thank you so much for letting me be on today.
So, Karen, how many people participated last year?
We had 1,200 last year. That was our second year. Our first year, we had 900. So we're expecting 1,200. We have volunteer spots for 1,200.
And how are signups going so far? Of course, this is the time when you start. I'm asking you front end.
Yes.
But now's the time when we start to stimulate the signups.
Yes. August 1st, it opened up. People that really knew what projects they wanted jumped right on and filled them. But we really need people to get signed up. And this is when I kind of have a heart attack. But, you know, groups like Rotary and book clubs and ski clubs and all the different groups, pick a project and get your group and go out and do it. There's, you know, for some projects for 100, some for 10. So find your project that's interesting, get your friends signed up. And you know, it really, for the next couple of weeks, we need you to get signed up. We want these organizations that have taken a lot of effort to also put these projects together to know they're valued and that people are going to be there. And we know people will be there. And it's always like one of my most moving moments last year was being in the park and this whole landscape company. So we could use you, landscape companies. It'd be great if you reached out before. And they just showed up and they said, where do you need us? And I had many people just say, where do you need us? And they filled all the gaps. But we would love to not be stressed out. So get online now. And it's just, I promise you, it's the most fun day. You'll see us in the parade on Miner's Day. Feel free to come join us. We'll provide you with t-shirts and stickers that we hand out that have all the information about our event. It's always really fun. We'll be in Sweet Alley at 10:30 in the morning. But show up for the day. Half of life is showing up. So show up and serve your community and get to know your neighbors. And it'll be a really wonderful day.
All right, Karen, anything else you want to touch on before we go?
Nope. All thank right. you.
Thank you for being here. And thank you for organizing the 9/11 Day of Service.
Thanks.
Well, this summer's heavy monsoonal rainfall has reduced wildfire risk in parts of the state, but that precipitation hasn't refilled Utah's record low reservoirs. KPCW's Ula Britt Liebe reports.
Experts say heavy rains are good for the state, but won't immediately help Utah's waning water supply. Utah Snow Survey Supervisor Jordan Clayton says the winter's record low snowfall is behind the state's concerning water levels.
Based on August 1st, the majority of Utah's basins were in around the 20th percentile or below for water availability, with several in the bottom fifth percentile. So in other words, there's a bunch of areas of the state where we haven't seen conditions like this 95% of the time or worse.
Water levels in the Wasatch Back are low, but still better than others across the state. Clayton says Thames Canyon saw less than 50% of normal August precipitation, and East Canyon Creek near Jeremy Ranch is at about 57% of normal. Rockport Reservoir is at roughly 40% capacity, down from an average of 87%. Clayton says the snowpack has fluctuated dramatically over the past 15 years.
It's been pretty extreme, where 2023 we set records for the state snowpack-wise, and last winter we also set records for the state snowpack-wise in the opposite direction, and a lot of back and forth in between, so it's hard to manage when you get these back and forth winters like this.
Despite this year's low water levels, Clayton says the summer's monsoonal events could benefit snowmelt next year.
They put a lot of water up in our mountains in the ground, and when we have moist soils, that helps when we do ultimately get the snowmelt the following spring. It helps a larger proportion of that snowmelt make it efficiently downstream.
Clayton says he's cautiously optimistic about the upcoming El Nino forecast, even though heavy snow is not guaranteed. Ula Britt Liebe, KPCW News.
A lightning sparked a small fire in steep terrain on Park City Mountain Wednesday night. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that Park City firefighters had it contained by Thursday afternoon.
Park City Fire Assistant Chief Ashley Lewis told KPCW the half-acre Thames Canyon fire was no longer active as of 2:30 in the afternoon. The Park City Fire District had turned the scene over to Summit County's fire warden, but still had crews mopping up hot spots alongside 13 state firefighters. A state helicopter had dropped water on the fire earlier in the day, too. Assistant Chief Sean Briley says the fire started overnight Wednesday when lightning struck a tree on the east face of Park City Mountain's Pinecone Ridge. The site is uphill and west of the lower Motherlode Express lift terminal. The Summit County and Park City governments wrote on social media Thursday morning there was not a threat to any buildings or the community. Park City Mountain decided not to open any lifts Thursday while crews worked on the fire. Trails in the area were closed as well. Lewis said trails wouldn't reopen until Friday. Utah Fire Info says the fire was reported just after 6:30 in the morning Thursday. It burned some of the forest floor in the area of the lightning strike. Residents spotted the smoke column above the ski resort before fire crews arrived. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, it's been back to school week, both here in Summit County and also here in Wasatch County. On the phone to talk to us about what's going on in the new year is Wasatch County Superintendent Garrick Peterson. Morning, Garrick. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Okay, Garrick, so first week of school. Actually, it's the second week of school. How's the is this the time of year you most look forward to?
Yeah, it's always fun to go back. You kind of ramp up, do some work over the summer, and it's always great to have the kids come back into the school.
Everything goes smoothly the first week?
Yeah, you know, we split our high school down here this year, so a lot of newness it went really well. We have great kids that have transitioned as well as possible on that end faculty, so it's gone about as smooth as we could expect.
Now, when you have a new high school in a small community like yours, how do you decide? I assume that the decision as to which kids go where is based on geography, but what did you do about the seniors?
Yeah, so the school board actually gave permission for every kid to choose which school they went to, and we've got kids going back and forth across the valley right now. A lot of that decision, as we've watched, came down to friendship groups. You know, if a kid from Heber City was a good friend with a group from Midway, he might have gone over to Deer Creek High School and vice versa. So a lot of every kid got to choose where they went. That's state law. Kids get to choose where they go, and we just kind of stuck with that from the get-go, and it ended up being about a 50-50 split. Both schools are about the exact same size, but we got kids traveling back and forth across the valley depending on, you know, a teacher they want to be with, a coach they want to be with, friends they want to be with. Different things are driving that.
Now, over time, will that transition to where it is a geographic basis?
No, state law allows kids to choose where they attend school, and so
how does that
we'll just follow the state law on that.
How does that affect transportation?
What's that?
How does that affect transportation?
If you go to school outside your boundary area, it's up to you to get yourself to school.
Okay. I take it, have both high schools had their football debuts yet?
They have.
Anybody got a winner?
Nope, no wins yet.
Well, eventually they're going to have to play each other, aren't they?
They play each other next weekend.
That should be a pretty intense rivalry.
Yeah, it should be pretty fun. The kids have done a really good job with the split. You know, we got a model called Rivalry Right. These kids have been friends forever. They've grown up forever. They've played sports together. It doesn't have to be a bitter thing. It's probably a little bit like playing your brother. You want to win as bad as you can, but then after, you're good friends. And our student government, different student leadership groups, our coaches, our administration at the two schools have done a really good job. You know, I've got kids to play sports, and I'll see kids from the other school there cheering on, you know, right now my daughter. This valley, we've been one valley for a long time, and they're all still friends, and they've done a good job showing up to support each other as friends.
Let's talk about some things that have come up at the board meeting. I know last night, as I understand it, district staff presented a potential bell-to-bell cell phone ban. What would that mean?
Yeah, so right now, I mean, we just look at, again, state law on this. And, you know, right now, the cell phone policy we have does run within state law. We give some exemptions for, you know, people can have their phones at certain times. But the bell-to-bell, we actually went up to Park City High School, and you're just kind of exploring what you want to do. We had a group of administrators go up to Park City High School and check out what they're doing, where they put cell phones in pouches, and that kind of locks down the phones for the day. And so we're just looking at different options right now, not committing to anything other than what we're currently doing. But we're always looking at options there that could create an environment that is better for the education of our kids, or we may find out what we're doing is what we feel is the best thing that we can do.
You know, Superintendent, when you go into a meeting with adults nowadays, so often you find them trying to multitask, looking at their phones. And I think it's pretty hard to focus when you do that. Is that what the concern is for the learning environment?
Yeah, you probably have two different thoughts on that. You know, the one thought would be, you know, if you like do what Park City's doing, you put the phones in pouches for the day, you've taken the temptation of that distraction away. You've created a safer environment where they don't feel the pressures of trying to, you know, respond to the next text that comes in. So that's one side of the thinking on that. Another side of the thinking would be, you know, teach them to use it responsibly. Somebody's got to teach them somewhere to use that responsibly. So you've got two sides of the thought, and I think both have an end game of, you know, people that when they're sitting in those meetings aren't distracted by their phone, but are actually engaged in the situation that they're in. And I think that's what we want for everybody as they grow into adults.
I know that attracting and retaining staff, teachers in particular, in our area is extremely challenging for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is, you know, the price of housing. I know in the past you've had a home building program. Talk to us a little bit about that. And I know that came up.
Yeah.
You had a presentation on that last night.
Yeah, there's a presentation right now. We own a little bit of property north of one of our middle schools. We've had a home building project. You know, several districts do this where they have students build a home. We've been really fortunate to have some phenomenal contractors come in and help our kids learn how to do that. It's a very popular program for our kids. But then at the end, we've attempted to sell those homes to teachers at a little bit more affordable rate. Well, it's hard to get lots around here. I mean, land's at a premium, and we own that land. And so a proposal has come in to take that, turn it into lots for our teachers in the future and get them into affordable homes. And we think that would be a great thing for the community and for our teachers as well. We're trying to partner with the county on that with some zoning things, and, you know, we'll just see how that moves forward.
And I think one item that I understand came up was this notion that the students are not only involved in the building of the homes, but in the design. How does that work?
Yeah, so there's different classes that you can get involved in the building of the home. One, you know, would be the design side of things. Another is the construction side of things. The other, you could do once the home's built, the interior design of the home. So you can get kids involved in different ways. I think that's one of the great things about it. And, you know, this is an industry that's, you know, very alive in our community. There's lots of job opportunities there. I think a lot of kids are interested in that. I think we got around 45, 50 kids that are involved in that program right now down here. Just getting those different opportunities to do everything. And we really have some of the best, like, construction people, contractors, designers around that have got involved with this program and are benefiting the kids by kind of mentoring them. So it's a really good thing. And then if you can turn that into some affordable homes for some of our teachers, that's a double win there.
And my understanding is that your current program is one home a year.
Yep.
Were there discussions about sort of trying to amp that up a bit?
Yeah, we've talked about, you know, there's different ways you could do that. Like if we now have two high schools, if you got a program going in each high school, you could possibly amp it up. You know, you could partner with somebody like UVU. There's other partners that you could look at. Those are all things. I think right now we're just looking at the design and making sure that we have lots for our current course to build on. And then those other things would be decided as we move forward.
Okay. Anything else on home building? Because I wanted to go to childcare next, if that's okay.
No, I mean, again, this is just a great... we're trying to allow our teachers to work and live in the same spot, and anything we can do that and also provide a great opportunities for our kids. We're just super excited about different possibilities that exist there.
Am I right that it is challenging sort of to attract and retain teachers given our prices?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think our school board's done a great job of is making sure that wages are competitive. We do know it's expensive to live here, and you do want teachers to be able to work and live here. And so we've done as well as we possibly can, I think, right now with our salaries, benefits, and then you look for other things that can attract them into your community. We think we have incredible schools for them to work in, incredible environment to work in. You try to make sure you have good leadership. We do get great teachers here. But you also want little things like the home opportunity, or also, you know, one of the celebrations at our board meeting last night was affordable daycare is also a big thing for people today.
And we should talk about that. A couple of years ago, I know Park City closed its on-site daycare center at the Park City High School, which was fairly controversial. And it is sort of a key thing for many of your teachers to be able to do their work. Talk to us about the new child care center and how it came to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually just a lot of fun. It's been a fun project to be a part of. Stephanie Disher from our district office has kind of led that up. We were able to bring in a great director, Anka, with a lot of experience to kind of head that up. And we put that in over at Deer Creek, and we limited the participation to just teachers right now. And we filled it up. Got what they say. I think we've got like 36 kids from like 6 weeks up through, you know, 4 years old over there right now. Testimonials last night that we heard were, you know, a teacher that was able to come back into our profession, you know, a couple of teachers that now have peace of mind that they have affordable to get daycare. And those are really big deals to teachers. Several teachers that had kind of left our district have come back to our district now that we have that option for affordable daycare. So anytime we can do anything that helps keep great teachers in front of our kids, because that's where the magic happens, is when you know, a great teacher has an influence on a kid, we win. So you look at the different routes you can take to make that happen, and that the child care facility over at Deer Creek High School has been a really great thing for our district.
And who, you mentioned it was only for teachers. About how many kids can it service, and is there already a waiting list?
It's 36, and yeah, there is a waiting list.
Okay, and tell us about...
So we're full.
So we're not going to get a bunch of sign-ups. What ages does it serve? And I know that the resource intensiveness for the babies is much higher than the toddlers. So is there a break there?
Yeah, there's state laws, and I don't know off the top of my head what the breakdown is right now, but we've got all different ages. But, like, there's laws that govern, like, you know, the support that you have to have for a newborn, and we have several, you know, young babies over there. And then also for when you get up into 3-4 years old. So it's a little bit different, and, you know, we have ourselves at capacity for what our facility will allow us to have. So,
and of course, like anything else in the school system, I guess my understanding is that this too is seen as an opportunity to educate. I assume you have students learning by working at the daycare center?
That's not part of it yet. Right now it's just a full-on, those are things that we'll look at in the future. There are courses that you can run in conjunction with this, but right now this is just a child care facility for our employees.
I'm going to ask you, if we were to take a picture of you at the Deer Creek Wasatch game, what would you be wearing?
Probably a Wasatch hat and a Deer Creek hoodie.
I figured that's what you would be doing.
I actually have kids going to both high schools, so nobody can claim I'm biased. I have one at each school.
Garrett Peterson, the superintendent of the Wasatch School District, thanks for spending time with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. The Park City Planning Commission likes the new 5-acre Bonanza Park concepts with shorter buildings. But as KPCW's Christine Weller reports, they are split on how tall the gables should be.
The Park City Planning Commission held its third public hearing on the 5-acre Bonanza Park proposal Wednesday. The developer came back with reduced building heights for the 6 buildings with residential units. All were previously above the zoned 35-foot maximum and the 40-foot exception for gables. Now, five of those buildings meet the code for the most part. Stephen Swisher from GTS Development said the centers of each of the buildings are 35 feet from the floor to the parapet and 40 feet to the top of the gable.
That's the heights at the middle of the project, but the site does slope up on one side and down on the other, which leaves a portion of the building higher than that 40 feet.
Swisher said the variation on most of the structures is about 1.5 feet. For the building bordering Bonanza Drive and Munchkin Road, the difference is up to 4 feet. To be closer to the zoned maximum, the new proposal shrinks residential floor heights from 9 feet to 8 and the commercial floors from 12 feet to 10. Instead of 12 by 12 foot gables, the pitches were reduced to 4 by 12. Commissioners were in favor of the reduced heights, but two, Matthew Day and Seth Beal, said the 4 by 12 gables don't look as good as the originals. Day suggested coming back with 12 by 12 and 7 by 12 options with the new height, as those pitches match the historic district.
And I think it's now it kind of looks more massive. I'm glad that you dropped it to the 35, but I would put those peaks back to 12 by 12, because it's actually not the entire thing that high.
Commissioners John Frontero and Grant Tilson were not in favor of adding height, even to portions of the building, for aesthetics. A sixth building, which borders Munchkin Road and is 4 stories, would still require a height exemption. Reductions in floor heights would put its overall size at about 40 feet to the parapet and 49 feet to the top of the gables. The commission was open to granting the exception. The plans return to the commission September 9th. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Christine Weller, KPCW News.